Lisa Davis, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Job loss, natural disasters, terrorism. With so many things to worry about today, your anxiety levels can easily skyrocket. Joining us today to talk about their wonderful book, Overcoming Anxiety for Dummies, is Charles H. Elliott, Ph.D., and Laura L. Smith, Ph.D. Their engaging guide is packed with techniques you can use immediately to overcome your worries and gain control of your life. You'll pinpoint your triggers, discover the latest therapies, and make lifestyle changes that will have you feeling better fast. Charles H. Elliott, Ph.D., and Laura L. Smith, Ph.D., are clinical psychologists who specialize in the treatment of anxiety and mood disorders. They are the authors of several for dummy books, including Borderline Personality Disorder for Dummies and Obsessive Compulsive Disorder for Dummies. Charles and Laura, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you. We're glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you both on the show. I loved your book, and I tend to have a bit of anxiety, and it tends to run in both my husband's family and mine. And I found your book so helpful, and I also felt less alone. Quote, stroll down the street, and about one in four of the people you will walk by either has an anxiety disorder or will at some point in their lives experience one. When did you first get interested in studying anxiety and helping people overcome it? Laura, if you'd like to start.
Sure. I think, like you, I've always suffered from some anxiety. As I can remember as a student being, you know, fearful about raising my hand in class or meeting kids. And so it's always been an interest for me. Took a little while to get through psychology. Started out as a teacher and found that, you know, going in front of classrooms and such was, tended to get easier over time. So when I really started studying psychology and realized that exposure is one of the first things to do with anxiety, realized that I'd been doing a lot of exposure myself just by living. And so I find the whole area of anxiety fascinating. And what Chuck and I both like about it is it's so easily treatable.
Oh, that's good to hear because it's so common. I couldn't believe
it. Yes, it's so common.
And Charles, how about for you? When did you first get interested?
Well, fairly early, too. I also had a significant amount of anxiety before I even became a psychologist, and even after becoming one for a while, it was very difficult for me to get up and give a talk in front of people. So, and, you know, as Laura's saying, and as you said, you know, 25%, you know, have a full-blown anxiety disorder at one time or another in their lives. And frankly, if you're alive and breathing from time to time, you probably have a little more anxiety than you'd like, even if you don't have a full-blown disorder. So, it's almost part of the human condition to have some. And a little bit of anxiety is actually probably a good thing for you.
Mm-hmm. Now, in what ways would you say it has some positive benefits, just to have a little bit?
Sure. You know, for example, if you're driving on the way to work and the car in front of you suddenly stomps on the brakes, if you have no anxiety or worry at all, you're probably going to be a little bit slower getting yourself to apply that brake. If you have a test coming up for school and you have no anxiety about it at all, it's going to be difficult to have the motivation to bother studying for it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, you mentioned a moment ago, too, about just, you know, everyone has some normal anxiety. How do people know when they've crossed over into actual, you know, having an anxiety disorder? And in a moment, we can talk about the different types.
Sure. You know that you have too much anxiety when your anxiety is a daily occurrence, one thing, and it starts to interfere with what you want to do. So someone with normal anxiety, okay, well, none of us like to drive, I don't know, 70 miles an hour on the freeway, cutting in and out. But we all sort of manage to get to work every day. None of us like to go to parties where we don't know anyone, but we go. But anxiety, when it becomes a disorder, keeps you from doing the things that you want to or need to do. So it interferes with your life.
Yeah, and I think it can also, for me, I've noticed, it can keep me from enjoying the things. Like, I might do them, but I'm so worried about mm-hmm. some particular thing that my mind is elsewhere because I'm worried about the outcome or something, and I'm sure that you must see that as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so when anxiety starts to, you know, take away from the quality of your life, then yeah, it's probably worth doing a little something about it.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the symptoms of anxiety?
Well, there's a lot of them. Physically, there are symptoms. You can get a racing heartbeat. You can break out in sweats. You can have increase in blood pressure, muscle tension, dizziness. In addition, most people have anxiety, have a lot of anxious thoughts. They start worrying a lot. They catastrophize about the likelihood of negative things happening to them. And usually you can see it in their behavior. Most people with anxiety start avoiding the things that make them anxious. And, of course, that avoidance ultimately ends up making things worse.
Yes. Yeah, when I was growing up, I had a very close friend who actually ended up having agoraphobia. And it started around 13, and it affected her so dramatically. And it was just terrible. And that's one of the anxiety disorders. And if you can talk about that and then some of the others as well.
Sure. Agoraphobia, as with your friend, usually starts out small. So you might start by feeling like, I don't really want to go, you know, and then it builds to, no, I really don't want to go. And suddenly you're not going to the parties, and then you're not going to grocery shopping when it's busy, and then you're not going to the mall, and then you're not going to your friend's house, and pretty soon you're not going out of your house. So that's a pretty fast one. But like most anxieties, agoraphobia starts with something minor and grows into something that's really life-impacting. It's a fear of being in some place where you can't escape. A lot of people don't know that. It's not just fear of leaving the home. It's a fear of being somewhere where you can't get right out, and you might do something embarrassing.
Yeah, well, she would have panic attacks. So she said it literally felt like she was going to die. And so then
Absolutely.
You become afraid of having the panic attack.
Right, right. And panic attack is another form of anxiety that can go with agoraphobia, but doesn't always go with agoraphobia. I'll let Chuck.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Panic attacks are a real sudden, sharp experience of feelings of intense panic. A lot of physical symptoms go along with it. Fear of losing control, fear of going crazy. A lot of people with a panic attack actually think that they're having a heart attack.
Yes.
Emergency rooms get people all the time coming in concerned about that. And actually, if people have that worry, they should get it checked out and really go over it carefully with their doctors to help them determine, you know, what's going on.
Yeah. Now, there's also generalized anxiety disorder. Is that the most common?
It probably is. You know, it's really the worry wart. You know, people who just worry all the time about everything. You know, you can hardly name anything that people with generalized anxiety disorder don't fret and worry about.
Okay, and post-traumatic stress disorder, that's under the anxiety umbrella as well.
It is. Post-traumatic stress disorder has to have a few things that happen. First, you have to be exposed to something that either you feel like you're going to be hurt very badly, killed, you know, raped, or you're going to see someone else that you care about, love, hurt or killed. That's the first thing that happens. And then after that, after some time, I mean, everyone is going to have a reaction to that for a while. But if it doesn't go away after a month or so, you're going to have flashbacks or dreams or, you know, sudden images come into your brain. Or every time you walk by a certain place, you know, you're going to be flooded with memories. So that's kind of the reoccurrence part. Third part is that you try to restrict your activities or your feelings or the cues that you get about whatever incident that happens. So you might avoid cars if it was a car wreck, or you might avoid walking down a certain block if you were robbed or something like that. And then the fourth part of PTSD is some sort of like acting out. You become irritable, or you become just kind of on guard all the time. So people with PTSD have those four things. They have the fear, they have the recurrence, they have the kind of on edge acting out, and then they also kind of try to restrict themselves. Some of them don't even think that they'll be alive to see things in 10 years. They sort of have a foreshortened future.
Oh,
it's a disorder that you really need to get treated.
Now, can that be treated with medication? Because I've heard some that there actually are some new medications for that to actually focus on PTSD.
There are several medications. In fact, there's medications for all anxiety disorders. In general, they're not the first line of defense, although there's some, I'd have to put them in the category of a little bit experimental at this time, but promising and have interesting possibilities of combining some short-term medications along with what's known as flooding or exposure. Most of the anxiety disorders are treatable through exposure techniques, which basically means putting you in touch with either the things that actually truly make you anxious or images of the things that did make you anxious. With PTSD, it might be going to the place where you had the accident or whatever, in addition to images and all of that. And there's a little evidence that certain medications combined with that exposure may actually be helpful. Now, the wrong medications can actually make the exposure not work as well, too.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that's really interesting. You know, you also, you know, in the book you have 10 dubious duds, and you mentioned earlier avoidance. And this has to do with, you say, this book is designed to give you ideas on how to beat anxiety. Beware the following things which make anxiety worse. And one of them is avoidance, and you have whining and complaining. That makes it worse. Oh, man. No. Seeking reassurance, seeking quick fixes, psychoanalysis. Now, that I found interesting. If you can expand on that, because I would think, well, isn't psychoanalysis good? But I think what you're talking about is that cognitive or behavioral cognitive therapy? Is that what you were talking about a moment ago with the PTSD?
Right. We're talking cognitive behavioral therapy is a type of therapy that has been shown to work well in treating anxiety and depression. Psychoanalysis is sort of the one that you see in the movies. The people that are in psychoanalysis often go to one guy for like 15 years, you know, and they go 3 or 4 times a week. And most people don't practice that or can't afford it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's not going to be your first defense against anxiety.
Do you think it can keep – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you have the time and the money to do psychoanalysis – and that nothing really terrible is happening to you right now, but you do need to kind of figure out some existential worries, then I'm not saying that it's not good.
And I'll actually add that there are a few variations of psychoanalytic approaches that are a little bit shorter term and more focused that have been found to be helpful for a variety of different types of problems. And so, you know, I wouldn't want to go too far in saying that that's a terrible way to go for anxiety. But in general, Laura's right. I mean, the cognitive behavioral strategies have an awful lot of data and evidence to suggest that they can get you moving fairly quickly and really take care of some of these problems.
Do you think that, for example, I know somebody that has been going to therapy for 25 years and still has a lot of anxiety and depression. It doesn't seem – it seems like, can it make it worse maybe if you're only doing the – talk therapy, as I call it, the psychoanalysis? It just seems like I haven't seen a lot of strategies employed, and that concerns me. Have you seen that as well in your practice?
We don't want to get anyone mad at us.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Well, we've already done it. That's
yeah,
okay.
We do all the time.
I'll
tell you, I'd wonder if I was going somewhere for 25 years and not feeling any better.
I mean, different people, but the same type of therapy, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that is a problem. I mean, it, especially with anxiety, you need some strategies. You need some specific types of focused interventions, you know, and really it isn't just psychoanalysis per se that might not, in some cases it does include some of those, but, you know, that it's not the only one that might fail to do that. And, you know, there are a variety of approaches out there in the mental health field, some of which don't include too much in terms of focused, goal-oriented strategies, and these are just problems that are tailor-made for that need it.
I see. Now, what are some things listeners can do right now? For example, breathing exercises have helped me a lot when I just kind of stop and do some breathing exercises. And what are some other things as well?
Yeah, you know, these are some simple things. They're not a substitute for therapy per se, but they sometimes can be a little bit helpful in the short run and for mild anxiety. And as you say, slow, deep breathing can be very helpful, where you very slowly inhale, hold your breath a few seconds, let it out very, very slowly, and repeat that 8 or 10 times. Another thing you can do that's very helpful is exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It helps burn off adrenaline, helps calm the body down after you've done it for a little while. It can be helpful to do something soothing and tension-reducing, like a massage or a long hot bath or shower. You can sometimes use a relaxing cup of tea. People vary in terms of how much they buy that, you know, certain teas truly have a medicinal value, but many people find them relaxing one way or another. Sometimes looking at your thoughts just briefly can be helpful. Asking yourself, is my worry as awful as I'm really thinking it is? Is it possible that there could be some sort of evidence that would really make my anxious worries not as likely as I'm thinking?
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it's hard to break that circular thinking. It's hard to break that thinking when you're stuck. And yeah, but go ahead. You were saying what you like a lot.
Oh, yeah. It is that to ask yourself, how important is this thing that's upsetting me and stressing me out? How important is that going to be to me in 6 months or a year from now?
Oh,
and nine times out of ten, the answer is not much, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, asking yourself a few basic questions like that can be really helpful.
You know, one thing I like to tell patients or clients or friends to do is to learn more about what anxiety is. And just learning a few things about how it works. Like, think about it. What do you worry about? You don't worry about the things that are happening right now. You're worrying about things that haven't happened yet. You rarely worry about what you're going to do in the next 5 seconds. It's, you know, the next 5 minutes or 2 days or 2 years. And do you have dogs?
Oh, gosh, yes, two.
Okay, well, all right. So your dogs do not wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning the day before the vet worrying about it. Right?
Yes.
That's what most people do.
Yeah.
I'm envious. Yes, it's true.
They sleep all the way until they get in the car, and then they figure, well, maybe we're just going for a ride. So they'll enjoy the car ride, too.
Exactly.
It's only when they get to the actual vet that they begin to shake and quiver and show
mm-hmm.
anxiety. And,
yes.
But us people, you know, we're really great at drawing possible events in the future into the present and trashing our present with those images. And so often those things don't even happen.
Yes. Guy, I love the way you just said that, trashing the present. That's really important to remember, because it's really what's happening. And, you know, in this edition of Overcoming Anxiety for Dummies, you touch on focusing on specific worries, and that's a new part. And if you can tell us the benefits of doing that.
This was a book that we revised. It had been out for almost 10 years, and we realized that there were a lot more things to worry about lately. That's just not in our imagination, but obviously for many, many people around the country, the economy has just really changed everything. And some people sort of take it in stride, and other people get so wallowed and stuck and worry about whether they're going to have a job or what are they going to do. And, you know, a lot of that's legitimate, but we hope in our book to give some ideas for people to just step back and, okay, well, we can all, you know, moan about how unfair it is and how unexpected, but, you know, let's start working on doing what we can do. So there are a lot of practical tips in the book about how to, you know, get yourself to write a resume or, you know, visit the library and, yeah, things like that.
You know, what Laura's talking about really is that we, in many respects, wanted to do the second edition because it did occur to us there were so many new things in today's modern world that seem to be worrying people more than when we had first written the book. And one of them she talks about, of course, is the economy. Another is natural disasters. Mm-hmm. It seems as though we have more of those all the time.
Yes, it does.
And so we wanted to address that particular concern. And then we had a chapter on pandemics, which seems to be of increasing concern over time. And then unexpected dangers and terrorism was the fourth one. And these are concerns and worries that many people can become consumed by and, mm-hmm. again, ruin their lives by excessive, and she says, some concern and worry about these things is normal and natural and expected. But what's not is letting one's life become consumed by them.
Yeah, that's true. And, because there's so much anxiety and the new things you just mentioned, you also talk in the book, which is great, about ways to help someone you love with anxiety. And if you can give us a few tips.
Sure. First of all, there's in any case, if you're out of control with anxiety, help yourself first. That especially goes with kids. Like we say in the when the airline stewardess says, if you're sitting with a child and the oxygen drops down, put it on your own face first before you put it on your kids. And the same goes with trying to help somebody else. If you're an anxious person, take care of yourself before you try to give help to somebody else. It just works a lot better.
Yeah, it really does. And go ahead, Charles.
Another good technique is to really try to, once you've managed your own anxiety reasonably well, to model being non-anxious in a sense. You don't want to invalidate either a child or someone else's anxiety. You certainly want to be accepting of it, but you want to model non-anxiousness, and you do that by saying things like, well, this has me a little bit nervous, but you know what? I'm just going to put one foot in front of the other and go at it and take a deep breath or two. And, so you model coping.
Oh, that's good. And speaking of modeling coping, you also talk about in the book ways to help children with anxiety, and you have helpful lists, and there's so much more. And I wish we had more time, but I'd love to have you both back on because this is just the surface. There's so many things that are great about your book, and there's so many people out there, obviously, who need help with this. Now, how can people learn more about the two of you?
Well, they can come to our website, which is www.psychologyfor4people.com. And there's information about us and all the various books that we've written.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, I want to thank you both so much. And if anyone wants to get in contact with me, they can go to, or learn more, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great week. Keep being healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.